This is Karen Brewster. Today is May 6, 2024, and I am here in Anchorage, Alaska at the Campbell Creek Science Center with Louisa Wolfline. This is for the Iditarod National Historic Trail Project Jukebox. And we're going to talk mostly today about the iTrek program and Louisa's involvement with the trail that way, and we will hear more about it. So thank you for finding time today.
Sure.
So you said a little bit before we started, but just when you came to Alaska and started this, what's your current position?
Yeah, so I am the Public Programs and Statewide Support Coordinator at the BLM Campbell Creek Science Center. I've been here for 21 and a half years. And I moved to Alaska before coming to work for the BLM.
Okay. And so you were saying you moved to Alaska in 1996?
Correct.
Okay. And what's your educational background? Are you an educator or a scientist? Or
so I have my academic training is more science oriented. I have a bachelor's in biology and a master's in environmental studies.
Okay.
And my work experience, even starting in college, has been in environmental education. So I just really enjoy helping people understand how the natural world works, help them connect to nature, to wild places, to their own natural backyards. So that's, yeah.
And where did you grow up and where did you get your degrees?
My family moved around quite a bit as I was growing up. I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and we lived in and around there until I was about 6 and a half. And then we moved to Chicago, Illinois, and we lived there until I was 11. And then we moved to Tokyo, Japan, where I lived until I was 14. Then we moved to Connecticut, where I went to high school. And my family stayed in New England until after I graduated from college. And I went to Brown University for my undergrad. And I went to what is now the Yale School of the Environment for my master's.
It's now the Yale School of Forestry?
No, it used to be the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies when I was there. Now it's Yale School of the Environment.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it had changed names.
Yes. I think originally it was the Yale School of Forestry. When I went there, it's Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies. Okay. And now the Environment.
Okay. So when did you start this position?
In the September 30th, 2002.
Okay. And what drew you to this work?
Well, as I said before, I've just always, from a long time ago, I've enjoyed helping people understand how the natural world works.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like writing. And my early career was spent working for nonprofit conservation organizations and developing materials to help teachers teach science and environmental education, get environmental topics into what they were doing. When I moved here, I taught school for my first year. And then my husband and I started our own consulting firm, which we did conservation education consulting work for 5 years. And during that time, this position came open, and it seemed like just a really good matchup of my interests. And it, like in my backyard. And I'd already come here. I'd come here for public programs. I was one of the people who rented the facility. I'd done some workshops, led some workshops here. And so now there was a position open, and it just seemed like a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so iTrek, which is the Educational component related to the Iditarod Trail. What does it stand for?
Iditarod Trail to Every Classroom.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that program?
Sure. So let's see. Kevin Keeler called me up one day and said that there was going to be a meeting about a proposed education project that BLM might be involved with, and that the Science Center might want to be involved with as well, and did we want to come join. So myself and my counterpart for education programs, the Science Center's work is basically divided into the public side and then the field trips and other programming for school-age kids as part of school.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of us went to a meeting at the other end of the Campbell Tract, where you're going to meet mm-hmm. Kevin. And there's a big conference room there, and there was a huge group of people assembled. And I think Kevin and the Forest Service and the Alliance had organized this meeting, inviting all sorts of people who might be interested in knowing about this project and potentially partnering to make it happen, come together and hear about it. And so I was there. They laid out the whole, you know, what it was based off of, what the vision was, and asked for input and, you know, interest. And both myself and my counterpart thought it was just awesome. And we were really excited to help BLM make it happen. And she left very shortly thereafter. She moved back to the lower 48, and her position wasn't filled for a long time. And I ended up being the lead for the Science Center for it, and have been ever since.
And what was her name?
Jennifer Fox.
Okay. And so what was it that got you so excited about it?
I really liked that it was going to help teachers understand why getting kids outside to learn is important. Two, get them and their students involved in projects that would benefit their community, and that they would be using the outdoors and those projects to help teach things that they already had to teach. There was not going to be a curriculum developed for them. They were going to be in the driver's seat of what was being created, you know, teacher by teacher, so that the, you know, the implementation, the development and implementation was going to make total sense for their position in their school, in their community. You know, just, yeah, I was just excited by that. And then the empowerment for students that such experiences would bring. It just seemed like a phenomenal way to get people, kids from an early age, involved in making a difference in their community, and thus producing, more likely to produce, people who are engaged throughout the rest of their lives in what's going on. I mean, as a federal land management agency, we need and want people who are paying attention and who are involved in helping us with land management issues. And mm-hmm. so here we're going to start from a young age, empowering kids to do these things and creating the citizenry that we want to see. So it was exciting.
So do you know how it came about? You said Kevin and the Alliance, you know, presented this plan for this, I don't know, I guess it's not a curriculum, but this project.
It's a professional development training.
And it came from someplace else. Do you know how that all came about?
Yeah. So there is a similar program on the East Coast, the Appalachian Trail to Every Classroom. And a woman at the Forest Service had gone to a presentation during, I think, a Hike the Hill event in D.C., at which Judy from the Alliance was also present. And she'd been to this presentation, and I think actually that she'd seen it once, and then she saw it again a second year. And she was really inspired by it, and she thought, you know, shoot, the Iditarod Trail could do this for teachers in communities along it in the same way and have the same impacts. And so I think it was because of her attending presentations about the Appalachian Trail to every classroom that inspired her to say, hey, we could make this happen.
Her being Judy Bittner, or her being the Forest Service person?
The Forest Service person, whose name I can't remember right now. Annette will tell you. I'm just blank in my mind for some reason.
That's okay.
But, yeah.
Is that Jamie Schmidt? No.
Yeah, Jamie Schmidt.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've seen the name. Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, and so, I think she got Judy excited about it and maybe Kevin at the same time. And then they got, the Appalachian Trail to Every Classroom program had been spearheaded by a woman named Rita Hennessy with the National Park Service. And I believe it was part of her master's program. And Jamie and Judy and Annette and Kevin recruited Rita and then Delia Clark, who was the facilitator of the Appalachian Trail to Every Classroom workshops. They got both of them to come up and be part of that meeting that I mentioned where I first heard about it, where, yeah, this idea was floated to a larger group.
Do you remember what year that was? Okay.
Well, if it's been 14 years, then...
Okay.
2010,
9? 7, somewhere in there. I'm sure Judy may have told me in my interview with her.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Okay. Somewhere back.
Okay. So, what... Can you describe... what iTrek is, how it works,
Sure. So iTrek is a professional development program for K through 12 teachers. And it was designed for teachers teaching in communities along the historic trail. So all the way from Seward to Nome. It has been conducted as a series of workshops. The first one, a summer week-long workshop, which is been held in Anchorage or Girdwood. And then two follow-up workshops, a fall workshop in November in Seward, and then April in Nome. So the workshops themselves were held in different communities along the historic trail, including the start and the finish.
Right.
Whichever way you look at the start and the finish. The workshops introduced teachers to place-based service learning, which is the approach that this professional development is based upon. And so it was designed to teach the teachers why getting outside matters, what place-based service learning is, where it fits in the scheme of other environmental education approaches, what is different about it. You know, it's not just getting kids outside to volunteer and do something, but that whatever they're doing in their community is integrated into the learning that they're doing in the classroom. It ties to all the things the teachers have to teach, and it makes sense in their community. And it may you know, it in itself may not involve being outside necessarily, you know, but it's definitely something that makes a difference in their community where they are. So it teaches all those principles. It teaches the teachers tools they can use to help connect their kids to place. So easy things to do outside, ways to integrate subjects with the outdoors. And it also shows them, you know, gives them some of the background for the effectiveness of this approach, the successes it has had in other places, examples of things that teachers in other places have done with their students. And then it gives them a framework for developing their own curriculum for, as I said before, their grade level school environment and community that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, and then the fall and spring workshops would sort of take them through developing, filling out this framework for their curriculum. And that is how the program was structured for most of its tenure so far. But about maybe 6 years ago, we switched it up a little bit so that the first, that summer workshop plus leading up to the fall workshop, that time period was focused on all the benefits and the reasons to do it and get your kids outside and all of that, plus a focus on how would a teacher shift their practice during that time to, and they could do it at whatever level. They're going to get their kids outside once a month. They're going to get their kids outside once a week. They're going to bring topics into the classroom that they've never done before. Whatever it was, to some sort of shift. And then they would spend from the fall, at the start of the fall workshop through the spring workshop, focused on curriculum development. And yeah, so the workshops gave teachers a chance to develop curriculum, get feedback from the people teaching the workshops, as well as from their peers. They got that peer feedback at the spring workshop. Another key component was, so I've mentioned that they want to, it's designed to help teachers get involved, get their students involved in the community. So how does one do that? So part of that is investigating your community, knowing who your partners might be. And to that end, part of the summer workshop involved us bringing partners, like example partners from the Anchorage community to the workshop so that they could share what they do. And many teachers come from Anchorage, so here were partners they could tap into automatically. Or if they came from the Mat-Su or Seward or Nome or were in places in between, it would give them ideas of types of groups they might be looking for. So they got to meet these people, talk about the ideas that they were having, get their input on their ideas, even if, you know, the Alaska Botanical Garden or the Anchorage Park Foundation or the Department of Natural Resources, whatever, even if they weren't going to directly help in the project in Unalakleet or wherever, they might have ideas of other people to check with or things they might do, partners they could look for. So anyway, that partnership component was really important as part of the professional development workshops. They also, along the way, got a good dose of trail history because obviously you know, we were motivated to help them all understand the Iditarod Trail itself, its history, its current state, and the ways in which people help today. And so we, part of the, it started up summer, but then it became the fall workshop in Seward. Dan Seavey and Lee Pileski came to share trail history, the development of the race, the trail from the earliest days, what motivated creation of it, how that happened. And we got teachers on the trail, you know, there in Seward, in Nome, sort of. I mean, we got them outside. We did actually always have our closing ceremony on the ice, where the mushers come before they head up into town, mm-hmm. To the Burled Arch. So yeah, we would get them on the trail everywhere we could. We'd get them on the trail in Girdwood when we did workshops down there. So anyway, I think that's... Oh, and another thing that we covered in these workshops was points about getting your kids outside safely. Like, what are the things you need to think about doing, taking field trips, or, you know, everything from getting a blanket field trip permission form that would enable you to take kids out the doors to the neighboring park during the school year anytime you wanted to, like, what are just the safety things to think about, you know, carrying.
Proper clothing.
Yeah, exactly. Proper clothing, what sort of rules of behavior to set up for the kids outdoors, being sure that everything lined up with general safety practices for the school, you know, all of that. So it was really comprehensive, look at, you know, why it's important, how to do it, tools to use to do it, and ways to get involved in the community, how to make things that make sense in your community, examples of things other teachers have done, all wrapped up in this thread that connected them all, the Iditarod Trail and the history of that trail.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to do environmental education, by using a trail.
Yeah, the trail gave, it gave focus for each individual teacher, but it also gave this connection. It connected all of the teachers involved each year and year to year, to each other. And the, you know, that aspect of it, connecting teachers to each other, creating that community of practice around this particular approach to education was really important. And one of the things that they really valued about it as well. So, yeah.
Well, and place-based learning now is, it's sort of a buzzword, and it's very popular now. When this started, I don't know if it was as common practice.
I think place-based learning, I think it has been around for quite a while. And then service learning has been around for a while. Folding the two together, I don't think it was as well known when this started.
So what is service learning?
So service learning is where you do something to benefit your community,
okay.
And learn something in the process.
Okay.
Like, we're going to go pull weeds, invasive weeds, in Westchester Lagoon. And at the start of it, somebody tells us why invasive weeds are a problem in Westchester Lagoon area.
Right.
And then we go pull them. That's
okay.
A service learning project.
Okay. And you sort of said it before, but the importance of place-based learning and how is it that it's so successful?
So I think one of the best examples maybe is from Seward. There are a number of good ones, but I'll use this. So in Seward, the teacher had an interest in water quality, and I think maybe, I don't know if curriculum-wise, had to cover topics related to that. So she got her kids involved as part of school and part of her project, going out and testing the water quality in a local stream. And the kids being there, and with kind of her presenting all of this in a broader context, noticed things like erosion on the stream bank and stuff in the water, and that the stream was called Fish Ditch. And they did some research, and you know, oh, and it's an anadromous stream, but it's not included in the anadromous streams. It's not recognized by the state as being an anadromous stream. And so what started as just like a kind of, we'll test the water quality, and maybe over time we'll test this water quality, became, I mean, the kids took the stream by the rocks, or whatever would be an analogy. Anyway, they ended up pulling together a group of people in Seward who had never been pulled together before to talk about a stream and have discussions about this. And in the end, they formally changed the name of the stream from Fish Ditch to Scheffler Creek. They got it included in the state list of anadromous streams. They got the local, there was a local landowner who they got to do, I believe this is correct, got to do some revegetation or keep animals away from the stream bank to allow native vegetation to grow in. And like they did this.
And what was the age group for those kids?
They were fifth grade students.
Wow.
You know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
In Girdwood, I think it was kindergartners and second grade teachers teamed up because the kids had an interest in wildlife and in bears in Girdwood. And that grew into the two classes putting together a community awareness campaign around bears called Bear Aware Girdwood. And they did, the little ones, first graders, did PSAs that they wrote themselves, and then I'm sure they had help from the teacher, but they went to the local radio station and recorded them with the help of the local DJ, and those aired all summer. And they sponsored an event at the Wildlife Conservation Center. They had an art open house at the hotel. they produced their own, drawings for various bear aware messaging, you know, like take your bird feeders down, secure your garbage. You know, they did all of this. They made buttons that they gave out. It was amazing. And then it ended up, like, they kept doing it for at least 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
It was quite a thing. Again, I mean, these are little kids
making
a difference in their community. And through it, learning bear biology, human-bear conflicts, bear safety, like all these things. So, yeah.
Yeah, so the projects the teachers work on through the workshops, through iTrek, don't have to be something about the Iditarod Trail specifically.
Correct. Right. Some people do things specifically about the trail. At Mokotonc Elementary, the teachers made a to-scale. They have a walking loop, and they made a to-scale Iditarod trail on that walking loop. So, like, you could walk to Nome. I mean, you know, right. Stops along the way. And another school, I forget which one it was. Another school in the valley did that too, and the trail went from their school to the Historic Society.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, these to scale things get the kids doing all the math, okay, of how to space these communities, checkpoints, whatever, along the trail.
And then they get to walk the trail.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Every day, right. Whenever they go.
Right.
Yeah, another class at Mokotonc looked, they were interested in the early history of Wasilla Palmer and all the folks who came up to, you know, farm the land.
Yeah, the farmers, yeah.
Yeah, and they planted a garden. You know, they were, in learning about the history, they planted a garden at the school that mimicked the things that the early settlers were growing in their farm, in their kitchen gardens.
Cool. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, history, but not exactly trail history. Teachers have created multiple outdoor classrooms in Anchorage that... Like, there's one in Russian Jack, well, I guess there's a couple in Russian Jack Park near Nunaka Valley Elementary School. There's one on the grounds of the Sand Lake Elementary, which I still haven't seen, but I really want to go to because there were classes in the Japanese Immersion Program did it, and it that from the pictures I've seen, it has a very Japanese aesthetic, including a torii gate entrance.
Mm-hmm.
There's ones at schools in the valley. So it's, you know, pretty... And those they created, and any teacher in the school can use it.
So what is an outdoor classroom? What does that mean?
So it's an outdoor space with infrastructure that lends itself to... students being out there and able to do like written work. There's some sort of tables or chairs or something outside to make it easier for kids to sit there and mm-hmm. write or do whatever.
Or draw.
Yeah. And the in Russian Jack, they couldn't place picnic tables in the park. So they came up with this clever idea of these posts with slots in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher has these metal plates that slip into the slots and become either at various heights. So a student can put a thing here and stand there and write, or they can put it down lower and sit down and write. And then the teacher packs all those metal plates up at the end, and all that's there are these posts. So it's very low profile. At Sand Lake, they made sitting, like, benchy kinds of things in Wolverine Park by Campbell Stem. They had picnic tables that they put in. So it varies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that infrastructure to create a place to work when you're outside as a, you know, student learning.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the iTrek program... how were teachers recruited?
We worked through the STEM department. So initially we worked through the STEM department.
Which is STEM is...
Oh, sorry. Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math.
Okay.
We worked with them to to recruit teachers. And that will be able to tell you if, I can't remember if right out of the gate we targeted Girdwood Or if we got a bunch of interest, and having had that interest, then we dove deep in Girdwood. But we did end up recruiting teachers for several years from Girdwood. So the initial year, we reached out through the Anchorage STEM department and through contacts in schools to recruit teachers. And in subsequent years, we used teachers who'd been through the program to help us recruit other good teachers to be in the program, mm-hmm. in addition to general reach out to schools. And so that helped. And we created flyers that we sent to schools.
So in schools and all the communities along the trail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah.
And is there a limited number of people per year?
Yes. So, and that was partly driven by budget. And then the number of teachers we could get from schools off the road system was limited because of the increased costs for them to go to every workshop. So, yes. I think we started out, I think 20 was the most we ever had. Judy or Annette would know better. Yeah, but I think it was anywhere from 12 to 20.
And where did the money come from for this program?
So the BLM has an assistance agreement with the Iditarod Historic Trail Alliance. They're the nonprofit partner with BLM for management of the trail. And so a lot of money came from BLM to the alliance. And then I think that the Forest Service also put in money. And then the board of the alliance allocated some of their operating budget toward it as well.
Do you know on average what it costs every year to operated?
No.
Okay.
Judy or Annette. Judy would know.
Yeah. I was just thinking how much money you had to put on this very complicated multi-workshop thing.
Yeah. Judy will know. And we did it, I think we did it pretty efficiently. For the first few years, the summer workshop was in Girdwood. Teachers were at the hotel. The workshop happened in the hotel. And then the fall workshop in Seward and the spring workshop in Nome were both done initially using Park Service facilities. And then ultimately we moved the Girdwood to Anchorage using UAA, the BP Energy Center, to run workshops. And so that streamlined costs. It was really important to us at every workshop that the teachers understand that we recognize them as the professionals that they are, and to make them, you know, we provided food and and their accommodations and everything so that they really felt they were recognized as the professionals they are. Mm-hmm. So
now I was wondering if any of the local school districts might have helped fund one of their teachers, you know, the off the road system, if a teacher wanted to come, if they could get some assistance from their local district.
Yeah, so the Alliance, by being in the program, the teachers got their travel paid, the costs of the workshop covered, and they also got, because the fall workshops involved, they always started on a Friday. The two of them started midday on Friday. They got subs paid for that Friday. So that was a benefit to the school. It wasn't going to cost the school anything to have the teacher go. looking at budgets and thinking about ways to be more fiscally, I don't know, not responsible, but just taking into account shrinking budgets. We did talk about, I mean, there was one principal who said that she would pay for such training for her teachers and that we should try and get school districts or schools or whatever to pay for this training. So we know schools do spend money on professional development, and we are happy to provide this professional development. We haven't had too much success yet getting in a school district to say they would like to have us do it.
Right. But, and now, yeah, nowadays, shrinking budgets, more and more school districts have so many things that they're trying to pay for.
Right. Yes. Yep. And I think there's been shifts in what teachers are required to do. This workshop, this professional development was set up so that teachers participating in it could earn continuing education credits, which they're required to do. So it was a, albeit intense, but very rewarding way to earn those credits. Yeah, the teachers who participated always had great things to say about the program. In recent years, I think there's been a shift in what the teachers are required to do, and that we haven't had much, we didn't have much interest last year in a summer workshop. And we think it's because of what teachers are required to do now. It's not what they were required to do before.
To get their continuing ed credits.
Yeah.
Because they still
don't need them, or they don't need as many, or as often.
Are required to get continuing ed credits?
I'm not sure. I just know there's been a shift in what they're required to do.
Okay.
And so that has made this type of thing less appealing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah. So you've talked a lot about Anchorage. So were most of the teachers that have been involved over the years mostly Anchorage, Girdwood, Seward?
Yes. I would say Anchorage, Mat-Su, Seward, yeah. I mean, Anchorage, Mat-Su have been the bulk of the teachers. But we have had teachers from Nome and Ruby and Galena, and we had two teachers start in Unalakleet, but then things shifted in their school year and they had both had to drop out.
Yeah.
Multiple teachers in Nome. Seward. We had some teachers from Talkeetna join as well 1 year. A little off the trail, but
down the road they connect.
Down the road. Yeah, exactly. Only off by a little bit.
Yeah.
We also did have some teachers from Cordova.
Oh, that's a little bit farther away.
A little bit farther away. But part, they're in the Chugach Forest. And so
they were allowed to participate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think. So just off the top of my head, those are rural schools that participated. Yeah. But large percentage is Anchorage and the Mat-Su.
And they're K through 12?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so do they?
Actually, pre-K.
Oh, really?
Yes. We had, there was a pre-K teacher who, from the migrant ed program at Denali, who did a really interesting project with her little ones on just what it is to be a scientist and how they are scientists because they observe things and make notes about things and tell people about what they saw or felt or heard. Yeah. Pretty neat, actually.
Yeah.
So pre-K through 12.
All right. So you've given some examples of these different projects, and I'm hoping you could maybe give more. Do the teachers come up with those ideas? They come to the workshops already with the project?
No, they don't come to the workshop with a project, and we encourage them not to get distracted by a project, you know, to focus on the change in practice. And then, you know, there was no requirement to also be doing a project, but oftentimes they were so excited about implementing this way of learning with their kids that that just sort of happened. Well, the schoolyard, the outdoor classrooms was popular. Let's see. In Nome, the kindergartners, I think it was the kindergartners, it might have been the kindergartners plus the second graders again, or third graders. Anyway, two teachers involved at the same time joined forces, and they did a project where the kids visited with elders at the senior center in town and shared stories and did things like that. We had another teacher from Unalakleet, actually, I just remembered. She and her students organized a whole tundra exploration day for, I think, the entire lower elementary school, and they went out on the tundra with activities to do, looking at many of the same activities that the teacher had learned during the iTrek workshop. They all then implemented for the students in the lower grades in the elementary school, and everybody went out blueberry picking and identifying colors and doing all sorts of things out on the tundra. Let's see, at Mokotan's fifth or sixth grade class, developed, they, so the, when the Mokotan school was built, there was not much in the way.
And where is that?
It's in Wasilla.
Okay.
And so there wasn't much in the way of landscaping. So these students developed and planted planted gardens representing different ecosystems in Alaska. So they had kind of like tundra plants, mm-hmm. I think like a rock garden here and a wildflower garden there, like that. There was, where Mokotan sits, it's in a development, and so there's land being developed for houses across from the school, and then beyond that, below that, is state land. But there is no access to that land for a very long time. But there was a boardwalk put in by, I think, the Great Land Trust, and a kindergarten teacher worked with Great Land Trust and the state, whatever, to develop signage along this walk so that people taking it could learn about native plants. And so the kids made the signs that then got formalized as the final signs. And so, you know, and now I think there's a way for the kids to get there from the school. I don't know that they've solved all the access problems, but anyway, it's kind of neat that anybody going there learns about plants because of these little kids.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, these are just great, fun, creative ideas.
Yeah, yeah. And so, at Stellar, a teacher, her students developed a plant, like a plant field guide for kids, kid level plant field guide. Another teacher, another year, developed a universal quest. And so one of the tools that we teach teachers during the workshops is how to develop a quest, which is like a community treasure hunt. This teacher developed a community treasure hunt that was universal in the sense that you didn't have to be in a particular place to do it. It was just about going out and experiencing nature. And this is what the students came up with as a thing they wanted to do. So I think she did a quest with them at school, and then they liked it so much that they wanted to do one so kids anywhere could do an experience like this. We have developed a quest for the Campbell Tract, so if you're interested, you can do that here. A teacher in Seward developed one in Seward. I'm trying to think. Teacher in Seward worked with her students to do landscaping around the school. They did so much work. And you know, the kids in the process of these things, they're the ones who write the letters to the, you know, lumber supply company to ask for supplies they need, or the plant source place to ask for donations of plants. So they get the practice writing letters. They testify in front of community councils. They, you know, work with landscape architects to understand what it is they need to think about when they plan an outdoor classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, they have all these experiences because they're, the whole point of it is for them to be in the driver's seat,
right,
and planning and paring down their big ideas.
Right. Well, you mentioned the quest is a tool you teach during the workshops. What other types of things are you teaching?
We teach geocaching. And when we teach geocaching, we teach it as kind of as earth caching. We roll that in there too. So not only are we teaching them how to use GPS units to find things hidden in the land, and that, you know, there is this whole geocaching world out there where people have set up things in the woods and in trails, mountain hikes, whatever. But that those types of geocaches are typically something where you leave something, take something, maybe write in a journal that you were here. But earth caching, when you find the thing, it is in itself an activity. And so our earth cache is focused on everything from like weather, you know, identifying clouds, taking temperature, measuring air temperature, water temperature, to tracking activities where maybe you put some things out and now you're going to solve a tracking mystery, or we hid birds, you know, cutouts of birds in the trees, and here's some binoculars, and now here's this ID card, find the birds, identify what you see based on this cards. We teach them. So we're teaching them how to use the GPS to find things, and then we're also building up their toolbox of ideas of things they can do with kids outside by having each one be an activity.
Mm-hmm.
We teach them nature journaling, and we do nature journaling with them and give them tools they need so that they could pursue that with their students. And we also introduce them to inexpensive books, blank books that they can use to create their own nature journals, or a number of other thing ways they could create inexpensive nature journals with their students. Let's see. I mentioned, you know, just there's a whole bunch of things they can do to get their kids to engage with their students when outside. And so we have a whole like section. We will do samples every workshop. We'll do some different activities to add to their toolbox of things they could do with kids outside. So, you know, color matches to nature art, making art using mm-hmm. found objects to, what else do we do? Using the outdoors to teach vocabulary through egg cartons or ice cube trays with words in them that the kids have to find natural objects that match those adjectives. What else? Lots of things. Lots of little activities that are quick and easy. Just sound maps, sound ID on fingers, where you just close your eyes and every time you hear something, it's a fistful of sound. Mm-hmm. You put up a finger and then you look at how many did you hear compared to other people in the group. Just tuning in that way.
Yeah. No, but it's really neat that you're teaching teachers, or you're providing them tools that they can go home and implement with their kids, but you're having them do it themselves first. Instead of just yes. lecturing at them in a classroom.
Yes. No, we do it. We give them the experience. There's a really fun one we do on poetry, where we take them out. We usually use trees. So they have to go to three different trees, and when they get to that tree, just jot down a word or a phrase that embodies that particular tree to them. Stick it in an envelope, go to the next tree. And then afterwards, divide into three groups. Each group gets one envelope full of all the words, and they have to make a poem using all those words, oh. and just those words. And then usually we have them act it out, too.
Oh.
And it's a really powerful and fun way to just observe and record and remember, ultimately, like a particular tree, you know, just really taps into vocabulary. And we usually have three very different trees, you know, maybe a little young tree, an old tree with no leaves that are, you know, is dead,
right?
And then some magnificent specimen in between, you know, or whatever. But it's just, I mean, I've done this activity with master students from the creative writing program.
Well, I was going to say that to me sounds more high school aged. The all these things you do with the teachers, are you age specific? You're saying this is a high school activity, this is a third grade activity.
No, we do activities that they could do. Most of them have broad application, and then we trust that the teachers will adapt them for the age group that they teach. So maybe the poetry activity isn't something that a kindergarten teacher is going to do, or maybe they're going to modify it by bringing in three different flowers and have the kids talk about
right.
each one or something, you know, and then they just group create a poem about that flower or something else, you know. Yeah, the teachers, yeah, they adapt what they're doing. We do a thing with all the teachers at the start during the summer workshop, where we have them talk about the things that they want their students to know: the head, the heart to feel, and the hands to do. And teachers have picked that up as an exercise that they do with their students to reflect. And one teacher even got somewhere online little squishy, like stress relievers. There was a heart and hand and a head, which was, you know, and they could pass these around. And when they got the heart, they could talk about something they felt, you know. So they had, yeah. Teachers are very good at adapting things.
Yes. There's amazing teachers out there. They work very hard. So over the years of this iTrick, what do you feel are some of its successes?
the projects teachers have implemented are themselves successes. And the experiences these teachers have given their students and the empowerment that the teachers have given their students, like, that is so, I mean, that's just, it's an awesome thing that this program has achieved. The energy that this program has given to teachers to change what they're teaching or change how they're teaching has been really, as a person helping implement it, it's been really meaningful. I mean, to have teachers tell you that, and year after year have teachers tell you that they have completely changed the way they teach. They are amazed at the impact this has had on their students, the engagement that they have gotten from their students, the connection, the ways in which they feel connected to community like they've never had before, just all of that, to hear it from the teachers has been so meaningful. Like, it's just, and knowing that we are having the effect on teachers and students that we set out to have, you know, to see that success. It's just, yeah, it's great. It's great.
Well, yeah, that was my next question, is what has it meant to you to be involved in this program? And you kind of already said it, but...
Yeah. It's been really wonderful to work with teachers through a school year and watch them grow and change and hear how their students are engaged in ways that they've never been engaged with before. Just ways they've never engaged before. To see the things that they do with their students is humbling. It is amazing what they do. It is just amazing. I've been so honored to work with the teachers in the iTrip program. And yeah, I've given you a bunch of examples.
Right.
But it's, you know, there are so many more, you know, and the commitment of these teachers to their students, to their communities, and to know that we helped inspire and maybe helped make it easier for them to achieve these things is just really special.
And you do other things on your job besides just the iTrack program, right?
Oh, yes. Most of my time is doing other things.
And so what are the other things you do? I mean, you gave me your job title, but what does that mean? What do you do?
So the Science Center we offer programs to the public, everything from free lecture series to paid art classes, nature walks, special events. We do programming for kids outside of school. We do have a junior ranger program for kids ages 5 to 10. We have a program for the very youngest, children under 5, the 0 to 5 group, and their parents or caregivers. We do special events like an International Archaeology Day open house style event every fall. An Iditarod ceremonial start event. The Iditarod ceremonial start ends on this land here.
Okay.
And so we help interpret trail history, race. We interpret the race and the trail history for the public that comes. So I oversee all of that. And In addition, the Campbell Creek Science Center supports education and outreach at all the other BLM offices in the state of Alaska, and so I coordinate that as well. So what support looks like for any office varies from office to office, but we send people to events in which other BLM offices are participating to help provide, you know, activity stations for what's going on. We send people to lead interpretive walks some places. It varies from year to year, mm-hmm. too. We help people develop side programs, or we find out what topics they wish the public to know about, and then we line up speakers. We're sharing it here in Anchorage, or we do virtual programs and we get it out to an audience that has included people from multiple foreign countries. It just depends. Yeah.
So how much of your time do you think you devote to the iTrek program?
So it's hard to answer that because, you know, there will be like a week in the summer or, you know, when it's getting 100% of my attention for a short period of time. And then, and we haven't had a class of teachers in it in the traditional way for a while. During COVID, we did it virtually, and we offered virtual workshops. We broke the subject matter down into individual programs, and then we there were a few teachers who had like attended all of them or most of them, and then there were others who came and went to particular ones of interest. So that, yeah, it's really hard to answer that question.
Well, I can understand, you know, that week of the summer workshop that's devoted. Do you help teach all the workshops and plan them and find the speakers and organize them? Or you just show up in the summer and do a workshop?
So, no, with the team has been Judy and Annette and Delia and myself. And then for several years we had one of our instructor staff here also on the team helping to plan. And there's frequently been an instructor person part of the planning team. There had been another staffer who for several years was part of the team, and then she left the Science Center. And then this other instructor took over, and she actually did her master's work on iTrek.
Who's that?
Hannah Brewster.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So there's the planning time, then there's the implementation time. Most of the teaching in the workshops is done by the facilitator, Delia Clark.
Okay.
Annette and I and Judy, depending, would do little pieces. And then, so yeah, I don't know, in a year of a full-on iTrek is maybe 5%.
Well, I was more thinking what you just said is what tasks you do during the year for it.
And then when the teachers are developing curriculum, that piece of it, we review it. We usually break it up amongst the team so that we're each reviewing maybe 5 teachers or something. You know, there's some over. So the teachers are getting input from multiple people, but each of us doesn't necessarily have to read all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we meet with them we have phone calls with each teacher during the year to see how things are going, help on an individual level. And we try, I think between Annette, Delia, and I, We're always trying. We want the three of us to be there, but sometimes only two of three are able to, just on scheduling. So, but that's another piece of the support that we give to teachers, and we do that twice.
So, you know, all of those, that, you know, that's a lot of things to do mixed in with another, or other job duties.
Right. Yeah, and it's been less recently because we haven't had a cohort of teachers go through. Since COVID, we haven't had that.
Mm-hmm.
We did a summer workshop. It was just short, 2 days, I think, 2 or 3 days. And then we've done the virtual things. And, but that's how it shakes out. Sometimes we are dividing up who's reaching out to who for a partner meet, you know, that section of it. And when we were doing virtual programs, we had a couple outside speakers. So like I worked with Kevin for his history piece for that. And I think Delia maybe worked with a professor to do the reflection piece, you know, so we divide the work up that way.
And so Delia, you said Delia Clark?
Mm-hmm.
And what's her job?
She is an independent consultant based in Vermont who does place-based service learning workshops everywhere. She also does other types of community engagement consulting. I think she helps, she can tell you. You'll be talking to her. I would hope.
It's a new name to me, That's why I was asking.
Yeah. She does this work, you know, as well as, community engagement planning for parks and things like that.
So she's been sort of the lead...
instructor.
Lead instructor.
Yes. And she's a facilitator instructor. And she does the same thing for Appalachian Trail to Every Classroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So she's been doing this work for a long time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about all the great successes and everything, but there must have been challenges along the way.
Sure.
Or obstacles.
You know, there have been teachers who needed more encouragement and help than others. You know, they've had trouble fully understanding what place-based service learning is and how they could apply it. Like, there's just, sometimes it's harder for some people to, really get it. You know, we've had to give extra help. We've had teachers who had to drop out, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Just things, they were going to be teaching this, and suddenly one teacher was teaching this and becoming the middle school basketball coach.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't also do this program as a first year teacher.
Right.
And then another teacher who was teaching this, and then got added this to her plate. So, you know, so we've had teachers who've had to drop out, which was disappointing, because we'd already invested in them coming to the summer workshop. And also we lost, you know, it's great for all the teachers to be connected to somebody in another school in a different place on the trail. So they all lost that. We all lost that. There have been budget things, working with budgets. I think those are the biggest things. We've had weather that's changed up what we've done, where we've done things. I think there was one year where we couldn't go out on the ice for the ending ceremony. You know, that's just a little thing, but we... you know, adjusted in the moment, and that worked out just fine.
Well, and I was saying, if you're teaching teachers how to do outdoor activities with kids, you learn that the weather's a factor and you might have to,
right,
you know, everybody put their rain gear on, or we're not going out today, we're going to
do something else. So, I didn't bring it up, which is kind of funny since I'm usually the one leading it, but we always take the teacher snowshoeing in Nome, and yeah, we've had some weather things affect where we were going snowshoeing on more than one occasion. It's been, yeah, we've had some very varied weather conditions there. One thing that, like, I don't think has come up in this conversation, but really, is the importance for us of the partners we've worked with to implement it. I mentioned the Park Service in Seward, that provided meeting space for multiple years. And in Nome, the same thing. Just they let us use their little conference room for the workshop. And one year, one of their staff came with us on the snowshoe. That sort of support has just been really important to the success of the program. And in the case of Nome, it also, because we've gone there for so many years and the education coordinator there has been the same person for a long time, the Alliance and the BLM and the Park Service were able to partner to do a professional development workshop on place-based service learning for teachers in the Bering Straits and Nome School Districts at Serpentine Hot Springs.
Nice.
Which was pretty awesome. And then, yeah.
That wasn't part of iTrek. That was their own separate thing.
Correct. But Judy was there and was able to give history about I think she did trails. She'd be able to tell you more. Right. But also just about historic trails and how the whole process of getting things designated works. Mm-hmm. And
well, yeah, it was sort of an offshoot. They were inspired by iTrek and sort of did their own thing.
Mm-hmm. And it was good for iTrek because, you know, those school districts are tied to the trail.
Right.
So they could hear some trail history and everything. And it gave us an entree, which we hoped would have deeper payoffs. to teachers from other schools in the school district. Like, we had some teachers from Shishmaref, who was pretty fun to have involved. That was right before COVID, so that's why I say it didn't quite have the payoff because everything then got shut down.
Well, certainly one of the challenges was COVID, and you guys pivoted.
We did. We pivoted to virtual, delivering it virtually.
But it hasn't come back. The interest isn't it? I mean,
no, we did a session at the Anchorage School District Summer Academy in 2022, which was, we did a hybrid of virtual and asynchronous learning. So we had some time where we all joined virtually together, and then we sent them off and gave them a whole bunch of things to look at and tasks to do. So that happened. And that was quite successful. I think we had 17 people register and 15 come. So that was a good turnout for that. But we haven't, when we did it again last year, nobody signed up. And I think it was because of that shift in
So
what teachers are required to do.
So this year, do you have an iTrek program going on?
No. We opted not to do a work. We had talked about, at one point we had thought we might offer another workshop for the academy. And just if you don't know, the Anchorage School District Summer Academy is open to all teachers in the state. And so they do get teachers from other parts of the state attending. Anyway, we decided not to offer one this summer. And what we're trying to do is get on the, we're trying to get, offer place-based service learning to particular school districts as part of their regular professional development. But we haven't put a tremendous amount of energy into that. Recruiting, you know, I did an initial reach out and I haven't followed up. So I don't know. And we were planning for next school year because we think they planned that far ahead.
Yeah. And so what's the future of the iTrack program? Do you think it'll, you'll still be getting students for workshops, or you're just shifting to this new district-wide initiative?
I think we are trying to figure out what's next. A student, an intern with the Forest Service, put together a curriculum for teachers so that they could understand place-based service learning in an iTrack context independently. And so that's in the works. It's in the design phase, so that will be coming out eventually. The Forest Service Alliance and BLM, Annette, Judy, and I did a Junior Ranger booklet it's the Iditarod Junior Trailblazer booklet to tie into the Trailblazer effort tied to the trail. So we did that, and that's been very successful. And then, you know, I don't know if we could get it as professional development training that we do for, you know, the Kenai Borough School District and the Iditarod Area School District and the Bering Strait School District. Like, that would be great. You know, do it in the communities along the trail.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think we're still trying to figure out what's next.
And with people like you retiring.
Yes. True, but Annette, Judy, and Delia are still there, and I think somebody from here will pick up the reins for the Science Center.
Okay. Well, I noticed that you have here on the table this massive binder that says Iditarod Trail to Every Classroom.
Yes.
What's that all about?
Oh, I just brought it with me. Just because, I don't know, in case it was handy for this
conversation. In case for reference you needed to check something.
So every year, every summer workshop, we would give teachers a binder of this size, not quite this full. And I actually have a separate one that you can see. This is a little program binder. Mm-hmm. The other one is teacher binder. So just... it's handy year to year to know what we gave them. And then this one was more for me, where I kept like agendas from various years. It's just handy to have them all together.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what handouts we gave them different years in case we want to recycle something. And so what we've given them has changed from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept things all in one place for myself, and I brought it just in case.
it's a great record of all the work that's been done.
It's not the most organized thing, but it does. I mentioned, you know, that we have made a flyer to recruit teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go.
These are some of the examples.
You know, it goes over. When we advertised, we would be able to tell teachers like that there were three workshops and the dates of those three workshops, so they would know would it fit with their academic calendar. When they got their principal's sign off, their letter of support, they would know when the teacher would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, here's some teachers. acting out their tree poem. So anyway.
So did you guys do a newsletter for iTrek for the teachers, or these are just they're just the flyers?
This was a flyer, and this I think is, I don't know what this is. This is a,
looks like a brochure.
Yes. This is a brochure just about the program itself. All the, some of the successes,
mm-hmm.
and some of the things the teachers have done, and results, what we've accomplished. And you made me think of something when you asked that question.
Newsletter.
Yeah. Oh, we did, to keep the teachers connected during a year plus year to year, and to keep, really to keep that connection going beyond with the year that they participated, we do have a Facebook group. It's a closed group just for teachers who have been in the program. And it's a way, you know, teachers may ask, oh, I'm doing this thing. Has anybody done something like this before? Do you have suggestions? Or we can share, hey, there's a talk coming up on the Iditarod Trail or whatever, mm-hmm. that you might want to, hey, the Junior Trailblazer book that's coming out. You know, things like that, to just keep them engaged. So we do have a Facebook group. And that's worked pretty well, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a good way to get people connected.
Mm-hmm. And to keep them across years. We did also do an alumni workshop one year. We took a break from doing a cohort every year and invited alumni to come back and learn some new things and reconnect with the ideas of place-based service learning and share what they've been up to. And so that was fun. We did it down at the at Portage. We used the Forest Service facility there for the classroom part.
How many alumni participated?
I don't exactly remember. I think it was around 12 or 15.
It seems pretty good.
It was a nice group. And it was, yeah, they had things to share that were fun to hear. And
it was, that makes me think about the teachers who've gone through this for one year workshops, and they do a project. Do they keep doing these kinds of projects in following years with students?
Some do, like the teachers in Girdwood who did the Bear Aware with their students each year. Other teachers, like the ones who have created outdoor classrooms, I think then they've used them. And I don't really know what they've continued.
Or if they do a new project. They don't necessarily do the same project every year like they did in Girdwood, but do they do a new place-based service project with their next year's classes?
Say
it sort of inspired their shift in methods.
Right. So I think teachers, you know, like once they've made their outdoor classroom, then they use their outdoor classroom, but they don't have to make a new one.
Right.
And I think like the teachers at Mockitons have done things year, like expanded year after year, so that I think that the grounds there are very different now because of the year after year doing something else
mm-hmm.
there. I'm trying to think of examples of teachers who have done new, different things. I mean, some people have built upon what they started with one year, and then they build on it with the kids the next year, and then take it further right. the year after that. We've also had alumni come. So the very first workshop, an alum of the Appalachian Trail to Every Classroom came and talked about what she had done with her students. Subsequent to that, each year, we've had iTrek alum come to the teacher workshop and share what they've done with their students. So that's just brought it like right home to Alaska. Things aren't jumping to mind, right. But perhaps we'll have other examples.
Well, what
of
you said about what you said about building from what you know, can we start this the next year? We do another component. We build on that. Helps answer the question. The other thing I was wondering about whether it was a challenge or how you've handled all this was the communication from within the team. I mean, you're different agencies and everybody's busy and how that's worked or not worked.
I think we're a really high functioning team. We get along well anyway. We're all connected through email and we do most of our communication through email. Our meetings, done a lot of meetings, you know, and calls and things, especially with one person in Vermont.
Yeah,
all of our things I think have been by phone, or Teams meetings or whatever. When I say we're a high functioning team, like we kind of put out there what we talk through what needs to happen, and then different people will take different pieces, or somebody who typically does this can't on the timeline, then somebody else will say, well, I could take that. And so, you know, we just work well together to get it done.
Because there's a lot of moving parts in the planning and organizing all of that.
Yeah, and Annette is a wizard of keeping track of everything.
Well, it sounds like, and you each have your skill set and you bring those to the table.
Yeah, Judy organizes all the logistical stuff in terms of travel and food and lodging and on and on. And Annette does a really good job of keeping track of teachers and what is needed to be done. So then I know what I can do.
I was going to say, so what has been your contribution?
I organize the geocaching activities, the snowshoeing activities, the how to be outside with students safely. I've done the working with the media section for them. That's another thing I didn't mention, but we did do that. And then I share stories of, I'm like a color commentator sometimes, for sharing stories of things teachers have done. I integrated examples of things that teachers have done in Alaska to an activity that we do just on the range of things teachers have done across the country. Lots of input for teachers on their unit development, you know, the things that they're developing.
Right.
A lot of question answering. And
yeah, it seems like you're very connected with the teacher school community in Anchorage, Matsu area.
Well, the teachers who are in this in the program, connected to them, we see lots of kids here from mostly schools in Anchorage, but some outside. But the two aren't necessarily the same.
Oh, okay.
Although we have had iTrek teachers who'd never been here before come after being in the program, which is kind of fun.
That's cool. And so, this working with the media, that's for their service projects on how to get the media to pay attention to their community project?
Yeah, or to tell them about it after they're done so that the media will say something about it.
Right.
Raise the profile.
Right. One other way to connect the communities.
Right.
People know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And recognize the partners you had that helped make it happen. And yeah, and some things, you know, maybe are for the benefit of the community, you know, at large, or some things may be like, oh, that we have this cool thing at the school now that we never had before. You should come see it.
Well, and it also gives the kids who have contributed get credit.
And they get their recognition.
And they like to
affirmation.
Have that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I really appreciate your time today. I know you're super busy. And I'm just trying to wrap everything up with retiring soon as well.
Yes. So sorry I've given you more names of people to contact.
No, but that's fine. So I just, you know, is there anything else that has come to your mind?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we have. Okay, I'm going to turn this off. Thank you.